Chapter 28.
For the most part, I believed my system to work, and I strived to give all of my people the necessities of life. The problem was that even though my nation esteemed all people as equal, people are never the same, especially in regard to what they contribute to society. How just is it to reward the indolent as much as the motivated? Not at all. And my dream of an equal society failed with disastrous results. You see, by nature people are both lazy and greedy. Unless driven by an ideal or passion, when given a choice, they'll always choose the easier option, or the one that will benefit them most. Seeing that my people lost the vision of the empire I was building, and that I ensured everyone the same wage, few were motivated to perform the harder jobs, or those ones that required more training and education, unless they were members of the guilds. So I took away their choice, and forced those people that showed ability into the professions I needed, and punished anyone who didn't meet the quotas I set. I took away their freedom to maintain productivity, stability, and equality, and believed it justified.
Lyra found the flight to the capital very awkward and long. Cusack wouldn't speak about the tension between him and the crew. Then a fall into their flight, the captain of all people had asked to speak with Cusack in private. Several hours later, Cusack returned, and though he kept his face devoid of subtle expression, his bearing and countenance was even more depressed than before. It was interesting how easily Lyra had come to interpret Cusack's mood through body language, as opposed to his blank and mostly expressionless face. Cusack sat on one of the large cushions, with his head slumped. "What happened?" Lyra asked in concern. It took a while for Cusack to reply.
"I am shame. I will never have Reen."
Cusack's face might have as much emotion as a puddle, but his voice always carried expression. Lyra had never heard him sound so miserable. "What are you talking about?"
"Tishlu, the captain. She called me to have sex, and I did."
Lyra's heartbeat instantly doubled its rate. She had to sit on the bed and close her eyes to try and hold off a panic attack as Cusack spoke.
"I say I am strong of will, and in most things I am. My mind is strong, and tell my body to work and become strong too. But in sex, I am weak. This mark on head, that is what it means. It means I have sex with woman who is not my reen, with a woman who has reen with other man. Now I have no reen, and this mark is for all Turasian to know that I am to never have reen. It is shame on me forever."
Lyra tried to listen. Cusack had never acted like this before, and she wanted to help in whatever way she could. Indeed, Cusack had never appeared more normal to her than right then. It was just so hard while trying to deal with her own issues. Still, she managed to keep the panic at bay, focusing on the social meaning rather than the act itself.
"So you committed adultery?" "If that is word for it, then yes, I have this mark because of adultery. It means I am weak of will, that my mind does not control my body. There is no greater weakness."
Lyra had absolutely no idea what to say. She wanted to comfort Cusack, but she couldn't talk about intimacy without hyperventilating, and even avoiding those topics. She didn't know a thing about backward Turasian customs and why they would savagely brand and shun adulterers. Adultery was, of course, severely frowned upon in Hamara, but people weren't branded and cast out for it. Cusack eventually spoke again.
"The captain, away from eyes and ears of people, cares not for my mark and my shame. She has come to live like you Hamarans, and want me even with my shame. I am without Rhin for so long, and I think Tishlu asked to have sex because she want to be Rhin. This make me happy. But after, she tell me she just wants sex, and not Rhin.
And then for the first time Lyra heard anger in Cuseg's voice. Fierce, hot anger.
Without Rhin, sex is shame. She give me more shame, and I am shame enough.
Lyra's anxiety disappeared instantly, replaced by worry. She stood.
Cuseg, what did you do?
Cuseg looked at her from the corner of his eye.
I follow law of my people.
Which was?
Cuseg turned to her and slowly pointed to the scarred brand on his forehead. It took a second for Lyra to figure out what he meant.
You branded the captain?
I am shame for weakness. Now she is shame too.
She would have asked how he did this, but Cuseg's powers enabled him to burn people and more.
Oh, light, Cuseg! That's called assault and mutilation. You're an arch knight.
Cuseg stood and growled back.
I am Tures. This is law of my people.
But we're not in Tures, and you represent the Order.
We are on ship that is Tures, and in sky it follow Tures' law.
Lyra sighed. Yes, you're right about that. But what gives you the right to dispense Turesian law? Don't your people have some type of judiciary?
What is judiciary?
A legal system. An official organization that dispenses and oversees your nation's laws.
Of course we have this. But I am Archknight. I have right to punish in law.
Yes, but the governments get very upset if they would have ruled differently to what an Archknight decided. We must be very careful in overstepping our authority, otherwise it will be withdrawn.
I did not step over. I did what is law.
Okay, but light, what if the crew turns against us?
No, they will turn on Tishlu for her shame. I am shame, but I am also knight. My people must show respect or they break the law.
Lyra paused as the implications of Cuseg's words sunk in, which brought on a troubling thought. That's why you became an archknight, isn't it? Cuseg didn't answer. I'm right. You were disgraced and outcast amongst your own people. So to get around your own culture's social order, you became an archknight, which forces them to show you respect and gives you a higher status than you ever could have received otherwise. That's why the crew has been acting so strange with you.
This does not matter.
Of course it does. Light, do you even care about the order?
I have given oath, and will keep my oath.
But did you truly want to fight evil for the rest of your life when you undertook the vigil? Or were you more concerned about obtaining a higher social status?
It not matter. I make oath to fight evil and I keep oath. That is enough.
That's not how it's supposed to work. You're supposed to want to fight evil with all your heart and soul, for only the pure will be accepted.
No, I do not want to be knight like that. Being knight helps me and makes a better life, but I make oath, so oath is enough.
Lyra sat down on the bed, overwhelmed with the fact that now all her suspicions had been confirmed.
Anyone can become an archknight. This boy they hunted, Cuseg, and even a tyrant, if he learned the secrets of the vigil.
Oh, Light, this is so much worse than I imagined, Lyra said softly to herself. Now she had to find that boy, and she would make sure he never revealed what he knew. By the next fall, Cuseg had returned to his normal self, or so it appeared. They didn't see the captain at all, even when they landed within the capital skyport. Disembarking, Lyra marched straight to the massive skyport's main offices, where the portmaster would be located. The main office was an impressive 10-story building made of decorative brick and several interconnected buildings. A horde of people moved through its many doors. Though the people outside the building took notice and made way for them, the crowds inside were so preoccupied with whatever task they were about that they didn't notice the two archknights who had entered. The first room was large and open, with countless lines of people in front of raised and walled-off reception desks. The fact that an organization could process even half of the submissions, complaints, fines, inquiries, ship inventories, and countless other procedures that the capital skyport required was remarkable. Yet the administration handled it well enough to see the port run efficiently. Though one might not say smoothly, it all looked so chaotic. Lyra bonded light to her voice and called out, "Silence!" Everyone in the room became quiet and turned. When seeing two archknights, they parted as Lyra and Cusack walked to one of the reception desks. "I need to see the portmaster at once." They were promptly shown to a formal sitting room on a higher level within the building and shown every courtesy. On their way to the room, Lyra asked that the portmaster find out if a ship by the name of the Maravan had dropped anchor recently before meeting them. She also requested that word be sent to the Hold, the official Archknight headquarters within the city, that she and Cusack had arrived and that they needed to speak with a superior. Their attendant nodded and left. The muffled sound of the frantic bustle in other rooms could still be heard within the sitting room, yet it was still comparatively quiet. Cusack lounged on one of the couches. "This is a formal meeting, Cusack. You should be standing when the portmaster arrives."
"In my culture, we sit to greet people."
"But we aren't in your culture, Cusack." Cusack sighed and stood. Lyra's stress gnawed at her while they stood there waiting. Things had been so intense recently. What with the threat that this boy posed and their lack of progress in catching him. What she wouldn't give to have a good game of rattan ball to unwind, go for a long run all by herself, or take a day off to watch the races. But there was no time for any of that. The portmaster of the capital skyport arrived shortly after, flanked by four harbor masters. He was an older man, but not nearly old enough to trigger her aversion. Indeed, the man looked full of energy, ready to get anything done that needed doing. He had faded blue hair, graying at the sides, the wrinkles on his face adding character. Walking to Lyra, the portmaster bowed respectfully before sweeping off his top hat. He was dressed in an embroidered tailed suit coat and wore cravat and appropriately beaded tassel with a bejeweled backsword at his side. Very fine dress, but considering that the capital skyport was the largest skyport in the world, any managerial position in this port indicated a prestigious career indeed.
"Lady Archon, I am Mr. Telfan," the portmaster announced formally. "I've just checked through the logs and with every registry station around the city. The Maravan has not seen port in the city for 4 months. I've also sent word to the Hold as you requested, and a member of your order should be on their way."
Cusack stood to Lyra's side, holding a firm, blank gaze on the people before them, and it was clearly making them feel a little uneasy.
"Thank you, Mr. Telfan," Lyra said. "I'd expected we might have beaten the ship here. Please place a standing alert for the Maravan at all registry stations. Also, the Hold must be alerted as soon as it's spotted. Let the ship enter, but I need to know in what dock it does."
"That's impossible to know, as the docks are occupied and vacated constantly through the fall," Mr. Telfan said.
All captains know they're free to pick any vacant dock within the area of the harbor they were directed to. We record and inspect the cargo of each ship after they land, as well as their length of stay, but knowing what specific dock in even an hour's time simply can't be done.
Lyra raised an eyebrow. But you can keep a specific dock free, can't you?
The portmaster considered this. If we moved some boom gates in, yes. The dockmen would need to be on watch for the ship to raise the gates in time, and the ship would have to be ordered to that specific dock, which would be highly irregular.
Yes, and that would create suspicion, Lyra said. We don't want to tip them off. Have the registry stations on alert, but admit the ship as normal. Then have them sound an alert once the ship has passed through the shield, as it will be too late for them to escape. We'll inform the border patrol to approach and escort the ship to a specific dock when hearing the alert.
Telfen nodded. Excellent plan. Should I be concerned about this ship? Does it pose a threat to the city?
The knights will keep everything in order. What dock will they be escorted to? Mr. Telfen looked to one of his harbor masters, the only woman among the four. She was similar in age to Lyra, the knight noted, as the woman looked through her ledger. A harbor master's role in Hydon was easily as broad as a portmaster of a smaller city.
I'll keep Dock 2 clear on the 12th stack, the harbor master said.
The capital skyport was large enough to have skyships dock above one another, and thus each dock was grouped in stacks according to harbor.
Is the second dock the highest in a stack? Lyra asked.
In the first harbor it is, Lady Archon. There's only two docks to each stack, as it accommodates for the largest of ships.
Though Lyra didn't know much about skyport procedures, she did know that the first harbors were regularly reserved for the more important ships.
Have it put in the lower dock, the first, and the patrol ship will anchor above, Lyra said.
I'll see it done, the harbor master said, bowing. Then Dock 1, Stack 12 of the first harbor it is, Lyra said.
Excellent, Mr. Telfen said. You may use my personal office once your brother arrives from the hold for your meeting. And if there's anything at all, please.
Thank you, but this sitting room will be sufficient, Lyra said. Please keep everyone from entering while we're here.
Except our brother, of course, Lyra said with a dignified smile.
Mr. Telfen smiled back, bowing.
Yes, of course. Good day, Lady Archon. And if there's anything you need, please don't hesitate to ask.
Lyra and Cusaig watched the men and woman leave the sitting room. Once the doors were closed, Lyra turned to Cusaig.
You didn't need to glare at them the whole time.
If they think we unhappy, they try and please us more.
But you're not exactly good at subtle facial expressions, Cusaig. You looked like the men were constantly farting throughout the conversation. Wait, that's a bad example. You Turasians don't find farting offensive.
That is because it is not.
What do you find offensive?
Having dirt on face and clothes. But the most offensive thing a man can do in my culture is to have his penis be strong when others can see.
What?
The most offensive thing a man can...
Lyra could feel her anxiety rise. I heard, Cusaig, but
light!
Speaking about things like that makes me really, really uncomfortable.
I was thinking you better at this now. When I speak of Tishlu and sex, you're not uncomfortable.
No, I was, believe me, but that was different. You were depressed and talking about it with me seemed to help you.
So you do for me?
Well, yes. Cusaig was silent for a moment and then touched his fingers to his forehead and opened his arms to bow.
Thank you, Lyra. You are noble and strong.
Oh, well, you're welcome. An awkward silence followed, though Lyra was getting more accustomed to them recently. She eventually let herself collapse onto a couch.
I am hungry, Cusegg said.
That's nothing out of the ordinary. Cusegg walked to the door and spoke to someone outside. Lyra couldn't see who. And eventually a large platter of assorted cheeses, crackers, and fruits was brought in. Once the attendant left, Cusegg picked up a small block of cheese and looked at it with a horrified expression.
This has mold all over.
It's blue cheese, supposed to be a delicacy.
Mold is delicacy?
Cusegg exclaimed incredulously.
It is mold!
Cusegg threw the cheese at the door in disgust, saying,
You Hamarans make me sick!
And then carefully examined every other cheese block with a look of distrust. Lyra sighed and grabbed a grape from the platter. Then eat the fruit. Surely Hamaran grapes can't be worse than Turagian?
That depends. Do you wait until it is moldy?
No.
Only with cheese.
Not all cheese. Try some of the others. Light, you might have even liked the moldy, the blue stuff.
If the mold is good, then you eat.
Lyra pursed her lips. She had never tried blue cheese and couldn't say she really wanted to either. It was mold, after all.
Exactly, Cusegg said, with a hint of humor in his voice.
Several minutes passed before the door to the sitting room opened and a man walked in wearing the Archknight's mantle over black dueling clothes. Lyra recognized him. He was Archalian Kennet, commander of the Archknight Hold in Hydon. Lyra stood and walked to greet her superior, while Cusegg reclined in his chair, eating a cracker.
Archonair, the brother said, nodding to Lyra, calling her by rank. Archus, he added, nodding to Cusegg.
Cusegg sat up and touched his forehead with the tips of his fingers and swept them out. He then reclined, continuing to eat.
Sister, Kennet began in a stern voice. What are you doing so far from your hunt?
We're still hunting, brother, but a different quarry. Cusegg and I have come across a young man who can lightbind, and he isn't an archknight. Kennet looked like Lyra had just told him the world wasn't flat.
That's impossible, he said. This young man must be a brother who's also left his assigned area for some reason. Or he's a deserter.
Is the son of Daedalus the Conqueror a member of the Order?
What?
He asked, flabbergasted. Lyra pulled the extra from her pocket that announced the Conqueror's death and the existence of his son.
I assume you've seen this?
Yes, and the stories printed in the broadsheets,
Kennet said cautiously.
What of it?
Lyra pointed to the depiction of the son who supposedly looked exactly like his father, just younger. This is the boy we chase, and I'm fairly certain the Order would know of a member that looked exactly like the Conqueror, let alone if he was his son. Now Kennet looked as though night had fallen.
Are you certain?
There's no doubt.
Then we must detain him immediately.
That's exactly what Cusegg and I have been trying to do.
Do you know where he is?
No, but we know where he's going to be. And I suggest we make a little surprise to greet him.